Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Today's Mike and Judy show is brought to you by Roberta's. You like that one? It's because Roberta's is pretty awesome, right? And Mike, there's Mike and there's Judy. And the, right?
It's pretty good. What is Roberta's?
We make food.
All right.
What do you do?
Make radio.
Barely.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border, coast to coast, and all the ships at sea. Streaming live from the County of Kings, Brooklyn, New York City, on the Heritage Radio Network. Are you ready for the fastest half hour on the internet today? It's the Mike and Judy Show, spanning the globe for high-minded hijinks and lowbrow kicks to bring you the best in sex, drugs, rock and roll, and nuclear fission. They're too bad for radio and too good-looking for television. And now, here they are, the Nichols and May of the Now Generation, your hosts, Mike Edison and Judy McGuire.
Welcome back. We're both completely distracted by the lobster roll on the table outside of Roberta's is making lobster roll now. We're going to have to change our whole deal.
Call our corporate masters. I want an upgrade from the pizza.
I don't want pizza anymore. I want lobster roll with roasted fingerling
and potatoes. And to think last week you were fighting for pepperoni.
Oh my God.
Well, the rules have changed.
Well, they're going to have to really step it up now that they have.
So we're back. It's the Mike and Judy Show streaming live on the Heritage Radio Network here at Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick. Judy, before we go any further, I want to congratulate you on your new book, the official book of sex, drugs, and rock and roll lists. The first advanced copy is in front of me. Oh, man.
Oh, thank you, Mike. It's been a long time coming, let
me
tell you.
Hell yes. Putting the sex and drugs back where they belong with the rock and roll, the most outrageous, unapologetically hedonistic book ever.
Wow. That's a lot to deliver.
That's such good copy. God, I wish I had written that myself.
Well, as you know, it was killed by the first publisher for being irredeemably filthy, pulled off the presses in the Midwest, and the Christian Midwest, and we had to go out to hedonistic Oakland, where people, they just have sex with anything, so nothing shocks them.
Pretty much. From the wilds of Wisconsin to the free speech corridors of Berkeley to get this book done. Well, congratulations. It's fantastic. It's the official book of sex, drugs, and rock and roll lists by the woman who is too hot for television, Judy McGuire.
Yes, that's right. And available now, I guess. It's even shipping from Amazon.
Is it shipping already on Amazon? So one click your way to happiness. Man, there are so many drugs in here. We're going to have to do a reading. We're going to have to talk about this in great detail. But in the future... But first, this is what I like to call with our special guest today, urbane renewal. after last week's weed and wine special. Tell us who our guest is today, Judy.
We're going to get highbrow with the New Yorker here. So, Carolita, you have a lot to deliver here. This is Carolita Johnson. She's one of my favorite writers. I love her stuff so much on the Hairpin. I'm a big fan, and I just took a chance and invited her to come be with us in Bushwick, and she came all the way from Inwood, and she got here before you, Mike.
Inwood?
Yeah.
Man, that's like a different time zone.
It is. I had to bring a passport.
Well, I'm a fan, too, and I'm looking forward to talking about The New Yorker and cartoons and how they get done, and I have a love-hate relationship with The New Yorker, I gotta say. I mean, I want to love it, and I've been really loyal to it. It's the only magazine that I've subscribed to, you know, consistently for many years, and then sometimes I just open it up, and it's just it's a snooze, not your cartoons, And the cartoons are consistently good. I mean, the ones that I can understand.
But I think that's everybody's case. I think everybody has a sort of a love-hate relationship with The New Yorker, including the ones who really love it. You know, like,
oh, yeah.
I constantly run into people who are like, you know, I've got like this pile of New Yorkers waiting to be read. You know, and I guess they just bring them on vacation with them or something. And I mean, they love The New Yorker, but they don't read it.
They love the idea of The New Yorker. Well, no, they want to feel smart by subscribing.
Okay, no, it's a commitment to read The New Yorker. What I did is I got it on my Kindle. So now the stack is not taunting me. I mean, I still read, I haven't read it in like a month, but it's there on my Kindle. It's not on my, you know, coffee table.
Well, my usual Monday evening routine is I watch professional wrestling. I order from Curry in a Hurry, watch professional wrestling, and then I try to read that week's New Yorker in one shot.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
That's a lot.
And I try, usually knock it out. I admit I don't read the fiction every week.
Uh-huh.
It depends, but I do try to bang it out. But sometimes, you know, honestly, I'm just finding less and less that I really want to engage with.
Really?
In there. I'm finding it's getting very samey. It's been humorless lately, honestly.
Well, it's
the Shouts and Murmurs page hasn't been funny since like 1991. Oh. Come on, let's face it.
Oh, no, that's not true. I found a lot of funny things in the Shouts and Murmurs.
Woody Allen and Steve Martin didn't write them, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Okay, we're not going to slam her employer.
Yeah, let's not slam everybody.
No, but then again, it shows up every week and I look forward to it and I open it up, you know, and I open it to the top. You know, it's like an Oreo cookie. Everyone's got a different way of reading The New Yorker.
Yeah.
So I usually look at the caption contest first,
right,
which I stopped entering a long time ago. When a similar caption as mine had won, I sort of gave it up.
Yeah.
You know, I just didn't get in there fast enough. But I do. I read the caption contest first, and then I go to the front and I read Talk of the Town, and I just sort of see who's written the lead piece.
Right.
Because if it's Henrik, I read it right away.
Right.
You know, and then I see who does the movie reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I like Anthony Lane. Generally, he's, you know, if he's not too snarky, he can be very funny and smart. I like it. And then David Denby's a little bit whatever, you know. and then I sort of get into the guts of the magazine.
Right.
Maybe flip through, look at the cartoons, you know, the comics, you know, as we go through, and then, you know, tear into the feature stories.
Well, I have to read all the cartoons first.
Yeah.
I go straight to the page where you can see who's in it,
mm-hmm.
because we don't know until Mondays ourselves if we're going to be in the magazine, unless they made a special request.
Oh, wow.
Like, you've got to do this cartoon, like the finish, like now, because it's going in today. And so, like, we all wait till Monday, and then we all check.
And you all hang out, like, in the same room, all of you guys, either with, like, Gayhan Wilson, like, who must be, like, what, 400 years old, and my good friend Peter Vey, who I used to buy pornography from.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. No, well, on Tuesdays, a lot of them go to the magazine, and they wait in this little cartoonist lounge to see...
Oh, wow.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, which is inside the New Yorker, like, across from the cartoon editors.
Cartoonist lounge?
Yeah, it actually says cartoonist lounge. Yeah.
Do they serve snacks and
no,
things?
No, they don't.
Cocktails?
Do all the cartoonists actually look like the people in their cartoons? Like Peter Vey, PC Vey, looks exactly like the guy that's sort of like his running stock characters.
Some of us do. Yeah, some of us do, definitely. Like Gayhan Wilson looks like his stuff, I think. You know, he's got all those lines in his face.
He actually shows up?
Yeah, he does.
I mean, he's been at this a long time.
Yeah, there's like an old troop of people who still go to the lunch. You know, there's like a lunch after. There's been a piece written about that in the New York Times. Yeah.
Okay, so how do we get this job?
Well, you have to go through a lot of jobs first.
Yeah, yeah. You have to be able to take a lot of rejection.
Well, what path did you take to get to the New Yorker?
My path was really roundabout and almost accidental. Like I was, I've been living in France, as you probably know from reading my stuff, for like 15 years. And when I came back, I came back thinking, well, I've got to become an illustrator and a writer. And just by chance, I ran into this New Yorker cartoonist. And I just, you know, I didn't have any sort of aims on him except to go out with him, let's just say.
To see him naked.
We met, like, I just,
Are you suggesting that there was some sort of impropriety involved
no,
in you getting this gig?
No, not at all, because I said to this guy who I'd met and, you know, I liked him a lot, and so I wanted to see him again. So I kept calling him, like, and he was, like, sort of in a relationship with somebody at the time, so it just wasn't sort of working out. And then one day I was just like, you know, I want to see that guy again. I don't care. I want to see him. And so I just came up with the, I want to show you some drawings.
I want to show you my etchings. Come up and see my etchings.
I literally said, I want to show you some drawings. And
keep it clean. This is a family show.
Yeah. And, you know, he took me seriously.
That's great.
Like, which was totally, you know, not my goal. So I sort of had to, you know, be a little more insistent on the rest of it. But yeah, he actually took me seriously and said, yeah, you know, you're drawing pretty well. And, you know, just try some different materials. And because I hadn't really been drawing regularly for all those 15 years that I was gallivanting around Europe. So, like, they were terrible drawings. They were dreadful.
But we should say, I mean, it wasn't like you were just flitting around Europe. You did graduate from Parsons. It wasn't like you were just some dilettante who had sketches on the subway.
No.
I mean, you studied it. You practiced it.
I mean, I've been drawing all my life.
Yeah.
And I went to Parsons. Like, my parents made me go to Parsons, if you can believe. I wanted to be an
English
major.
What kind of hippies are they?
Yeah.
We need you to learn something practical that will pay off and guarantee a job.
Well,
so go to art school in Greenwich Village.
Compared to being an English major, being an artist seemed like a better
actually,
you know,
yeah.
more sure route somehow.
It kind of
is, like,
actually.
You're not going to be one of those English majors, you know?
I don't want to breathe any irony into this, but truthfully, you know, at least going to Parsons, you actually come out with a skill.
Yeah. No, really, that's what they were thinking. So, but, you know, when I graduated, I was like, I got nothing to say. You know, I'm, like, supposed to be an artist, and I'm like, I'm, you know, all I've done is do well in school and stay out of trouble. So
it's more than most of us.
I got to go live. And so that was why I went to Europe, and I lived for 15 years. And then one day I was like, I think it's time to draw again.
One of the funniest things was, like, you were a model, and then you discovered it was the age of the ugly model, which, as a non-model, like, I never really
age. Yeah, when was that epic? I missed that golden
era. Plus, you're gorgeous. So
oh, thank you. No, I think it was, like, sort of simultaneous with the emergence of the supermodel. It was like, it was going to be either real people or it was going to be super amazing,
curvy.
Like Claudia Schiffer
right.
and Linda Evangelista. That whole group came out around the same time that the ugly model was almost on their way out.
Was that like, Kristen McMenemy or whatever her name is with the no eyebrows?
She might have sort of rode the wave of the ugly model. Like, she was unusual. You know, so, but she became much more successful than the rest of us ugly models.
Had I known, I could have ridden that wave as well.
I would be the star of the ugly models.
So, speaking of living in Europe, I've always wanted to be abroad. Laugh track, joke. But I did live in Spain as well for years. Were you there as a tourist? Were you legit? How do you work that out? Because I know a lot of people always ask me, how do you get away with that? And it was just, you know, completely off the grid, under the radar.
Totally. Like, for the first couple years, I had to leave the country every 6 months.
Right.
Whatever country I was in, because all the visas were for 6 months.
That's right. Well, I'd go over across the border to France to get it.
I'd go to Amsterdam, or I'd go to London. If I was in London, I'd go to France. If I was in France, I'd go to London. Yeah.
Sounds very jet-setty, doesn't it, McGuire?
It really does.
Well, once I had to do it in a bus, it was really painful. It all depended on how much you just, you know, had in your pocket.
So basically, we were illegal immigrants.
Yeah, I was a total illegal immigrant. Yeah,
absolutely.
And what was the attitude towards, like, Spaniards or the French about illegal immigrants, as we're such assholes?
Oh, like, my stay in Madrid was totally cut off because they couldn't pay me.
Oh.
Yeah, they were just like, we can't pay you. Like, you're here. We know. We love you, but we can't pay you.
Was that
go
the
back.
Toy job? The toy designing job?
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, you designed toys?
Well, I designed toys for this fashion designer who was setting up a boutique in Tokyo.
How did I miss this in the bio? So, wait, you designed toys for the fashion designer who had a boutique
in Tokyo? It was
stuffed,
like, sort of stuffed animals, and it was just to decorate her boutique, which was a children's wear boutique, very fancy, very beautiful stuff. And, you know, she was like, you could design these toys, and I did that. And I also did some handbags, like, worked with a handbag designer.
When I was there, I mean, it was always, we just got paid under the table. I was playing in what was at the time a popular punk rock band, but it was a cash business.
Right, right.
And then I was also writing for American magazines at the same time. And between the two, I was doing okay. I was keeping my head above water. I think my rent was only about $350.
Wow.
You know, which is this really big flat in the center of Madrid, which I shared with a couple of guys. And actually, back then, it was before the euro and the peseta.
Yeah.
And if you remember how devalued the peseta was, I mean, it went from maybe 100 pesetas to $1, pretty much one-to-one, to, like, as much as, like, 150 pesetas to a buck, which was like free money, right? So there I was getting paid, say, from Hustler, $1,000 check, which on any given
day
might equal $1,500, right? Because if I just waited a few days before I cashed it, it was like free rent.
Oh, yeah.
That was my career as a currency speculator.
It's amazing.
But it worked out okay. I loved living abroad, but I think at some point, there were certain things that are part of my American DNA that I wasn't being fed, that weren't being... I mean, pizza, sushi.
White Castle.
And professional wrestling.
What made you come back, Carolita?
In the end, I mean, I came back because I just couldn't do the drawing and writing where I was. Like, in France, I had this full-time job. It was like the dream job. It was like the job that they'd fought to get me. You know, it was the kind where on your contract that says undetermined time length contract.
Oh, wow.
Like, where they would have to hire a lawyer to fire you, basically. You know, it was like the dream job that they're actually still trying to fight to keep now, because they're trying to get rid of those now in France.
Uh-huh.
And I had this job, and it was great. I was working in software. I'd finally gone legit. You know, I had this, like, legit job with legit papers and everything. And then and I thought, this is a really easy job. I'm going to be able to draw and write, you know, when I come home from work.
Yeah.
And it turned out, like, after 2 years that I didn't do it once.
Yeah,
and I was like,
suck the life
you can't
right?
do it.
Well, my inclination after working all day is not to come home and work.
Yeah.
you know, I read and write all day. When I get home, it's TV time.
Yeah, so I was like, well, I can't quit this job and stay here because I'll be totally illegal again. And, you know, after 15 years, I was just sick of that. You know, like, you just never, you don't live somewhere on your terms. And I was like, I'll go back to New York. And it's like, it's New York or bust. You know, success or bust. I just got to start drawing and writing, and it's going to have to happen in New York.
How long have you been back here?
I've been back since August 2002.
Oh, wow. Great. Yeah.
And if you can make it here?
You can make it anywhere.
All right, let's take a quick break. It's the Mike and Judy Show with Carolee Johnson, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio at Roberta's. I'm going to investigate a lobster roll.
Oh, yeah.
That and we're back. We're still salivating over the lobster roll.
I know she's taking a really long time to eat it.
I know she's a tease.
Does she really want it? Because
no.
You know, like, I feel like I should just say, you know, well, if you don't want that.
And what is this hipster schmata she's wearing?
Wearing a sort of snood or something,
like a hood with a sleeveless t-shirt. The kids in Williamsburg in their outfits.
Williamsburg,
Bushwick. Sorry,
Williamsburg. Where the hell are we, Jack?
Cooler. We're in Bushwick.
I don't know.
I thought I recognized the
desolation. She looks like Joan of Arc. Joan of Arc with a lobster roll. Maybe you can work with that.
And aviator sunglasses.
So yesterday, we sort of had our 80s Saturday yesterday. You and I, Judy, you were off to pull muscles from Michelle.
Oh, I love that song.
It was really good. I had a big yard sale all day, and I was really tired from standing up and being social for like 9 hours. Just, I really don't have the patience to be social. And I'd been social the night before. And so then we went to Squeeze and I was like, this is what happens when you get old. Your feet hurt so bad. It just like kills any enjoyment. I was just like, why couldn't this be at the Beacon or Radio City where there's seats? Like, I really value a seat when I go out now.
I had kind of my Spinal Tap 80s. Day yesterday, I went to see my friends the Push Tetras. If you maybe remember, you know, awesome band from the same era, more or less, right?
Yeah.
When they got started with Too Many Creeps and all that, they were playing up at Barnard College. So it was back to school for me because I went to Columbia for about 10 minutes, and it was funny because we got there, it was just this big lawn, and the promoter, which is saying was an 18-year-old, you know, unshaven, you know, kid who sort of, I guess, runs the radio station up there. He goes, "Well, you're going to set up on the main stage." And we looked over, it was just this patch of grass, you know, and I think. We all sort of felt like, how many times we got to tell you, it's Bush Tetras and Puppet Show. it was kind of like that. But the thing is, by the time the band started playing, the kids really rallied around.
Oh, you know,
that's
good.
They really, really came together.
Did they play Hacky Sack too?
The kids, no.
Okay.
It's sort of just like sort of up there. It's not. It's different than the rest of college land. Uh-huh. You know, Ivy League above 110th Street land. You know, everybody's, there's sort of this air of, sort of faux bohemia.
Yeah.
You know, a lot more purple hair than I've seen in a while.
I was at NYU on Friday night for a dance performance.
Oh, really?
Dance is my life now.
And how's your dance career going?
It was, my dance career has been at a standstill since the Whitney Biennial, that project ended. But these kids were really good. So yeah, we both had like going back and experiencing, watching, being around people that we could have given birth to. Which is horrible, especially when you go like, oh, he's so cute. Then it's like, oh.
Yeah.
God, I know men have no such feelings when they see like a 19-year-old hottie.
Right. Yeah. Well, some do. My brother does.
Does he?
Yeah. I'm very proud of him.
Yeah. Good man.
Yeah. I was walking the razor's edge yesterday.
Yeah, I'm sure you were.
On that campus, you know? Man, yeah. So let's talk about the New Yorker and the cartoons again, though. So we got back in.
Okay.
What is cannot do this for the life of me. I can't do a good gag panel cartoon. I used to acquire cartoons for a lot of porn magazines.
Oh, really?
Yes, and that's how I met PC Vey, like I said, who's now pretty regular in the New Yorker, but the filth I used to buy from back in the day.
Do you want to know what my first cartoon that I really remember in a magazine is?
Sure.
Because I used to read Peanuts and all that stuff, but the first cartoon that I really remember that really hit me as funny and interesting and informative, my brothers found a stack of Hustlers.
Oh.
I think it was Hustler, right? They had cartoons?
Oh, yeah. Gayan Wilson was in
Okay,
Hustler,
yeah, because I'm not well-versed in porn. But
I guess he was in Playboy, of course, always, too.
Yes, that
I mean,
too. So he found this stack of Hustlers, and we were looking at it behind the car, you know, like, and there was this little cartoon. It was like a sort of a spot, I guess, and it was like an electric plug, like electric socket with legs. And eyelashes, and it was running away from
Judy thinks she knows
from
where
an
this
electric
is going.
Plug on feet. That was a guy, obviously.
Yeah,
and I was like, "Oh, this is sex." And it was funny, and it was apt, and it was informative, and I was like, this is a really good cartoon.
And that's Hustler, because usually the leitmotifs of their sense of humor, their cartoons, the running gags, are all white women live in fear of the black man's penis.
Oh, really?
Okay? And a black man's lips will become adhered to any smooth surface at all times. That's basically the tropes and memes of Hustler humor.
Still?
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
God.
Oh, God.
Well,
you live a very sheltered life, McGuire.
I do.
Of the new official book of sex, drugs, and rock and roll lists.
I do. I still get shocked by things.
You get shocked by things. And yet you were upset when your editor insisted you take out the fist fucking list.
I was upset by Jisley, who is like a fabulous porn star. She was generous enough to contribute. And both editors, churchy editors and churchy publishers, not editors, and churchy editor in Berkeley were like, no, we can't have fisting in there. So tell me about the first.
It's hard to believe there are still Puritans in this business.
How excited were you the first time your cartoon showed up in the New Yorker? Did you like? I would have had a party.
Yeah, I was pretty excited.
Hey, I'm excited when the damn thing shows up in the mail.
No, you know what? You know what the funny thing was that I had worked with the New Yorker when I worked for a photographer.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would manage his, I would do his production, and he would work for the New Yorker, and then I'd like have to work with these people at the New Yorker, and then I'd have to like demand that they pay us.
Oh yeah,
right. So like by that time, the New Yorker wasn't this like hallowed thing to me. The New Yorker was just like this pain in the ass that I had to deal with. So it was maybe I just sort of almost felt like, well, you know, damn right, you know, my cartoon's in there. It's about time I got some satisfaction from all those jobs.
And pay me now, motherfucker.
Oh, they always pay you first.
Okay.
They pay you for your cartoon, whether it runs or not.
Oh, that's great.
That's a very good thing about them.
Wow, I like that gig.
Yeah.
Note to Heritage Radio.
Right.
So do you deal with David at the top all times? There's a cartoon editor there as well, but he's pretty hands-on.
Yeah, we don't deal with David at the top for that. I mean, I've seen him, I've run into him and, you know, said hello, and he's a very nice man. But we don't, you know, we wouldn't dare... You know,
I've heard he's pretty hands on.
Is Francois Moulet still the cartoon editor?
Who?
Francois
Moulet is, she's the covers editor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Bob Mankoff is the cartoon editor. Okay. And, you know, he's been the editor since I began.
And how hands on is he? Does he help you rewrite captions? Does he suggest, some details? Punch up this joke.
No, he'll just now and then he'll be like, yeah, you know, your cartoons, what was the thing he said to me last time? They're kind of a little too obvious. You know?
Yeah, we don't want people to get this shit,
right,
Carlita.
No, it wasn't that. It was just like, there was just like something too direct about it, he said. So I was like, okay, fine. You know, that might be the result of me doing a different kind of comic, because I've been doing my own personal webcomic. So I was like, I can take that. But, you know, then he'll like, I remember at one point he would say stuff like, you're drawing too well. You know, this shouldn't
compliment.
Be about your drawing, or you know, like then it was like you're not drawing well enough. And when I first sold the cartoon, he said, oh, you know, it was just in black and white. And he's like, we need wash. So that was pretty much the extent of his input. It was like, you know, add some grays, and you know, every now and then, like, he'd say contradictory things. I think he just felt like he had to say something, just jog you a little bit.
Well, so how does this compare to writing? I mean, essays for The Hairpin, which I love.
The writing for The Hairpin is a lot more hands-on. Yeah. Like, you know, I'm quite used to, like, at the New Yorker, we just send like our either drop off or send our cartoons in on a Tuesday, and then we wait till Thursday to hear back, which is kind of like having the worst the worst boyfriend in the world that who says like on Tuesday, hey, maybe we'll go out on Thursday. I'll call you. And then like you don't know that you're not going out until 11 o'clock when you don't get that call.
The turnaround is that quick. New work, fresh work on a Tuesday. Yeah. And it's always fresh work. They don't have a large...
No, it's not always fresh work. A lot of us hand in what we call resubs. Mm-hmm. If you've waited long enough, you know, you might try it again.
Basically. With a new caption, maybe?
Sometimes with a new caption, sometimes without. Like, I remember I sold one cartoon, I just erased the caption and sent it in the very next week, and it sold. So,
well, here's
I just changed the caption like slightly and it sold.
Well, I've got an idea for you. I want you to bring this to the Brain Trust at the New Yorker. I'd like to see one issue that's got the same cartoon repeated all throughout the magazine, but with a different caption on each one.
That's an idea. I like that. I like
or
that.
Vice versa.
And they should all be Carolita cartoons so she gets paid 50 and,
or,
million times.
Or the same caption with a different picture, okay? And here's your caption, okay? And you out in Radio Land, you can play this game too. The caption's going to be, there's something you don't see every day.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. That's the kind, my boyfriend, Michael Crawford, who is a cartoonist there too, that's the kind of thing he likes to take and just come up with a crazy drawing. Like his favorite, the one he's still working on, I think, is, what is it? This is the Thanks I Get. he's still working on that. Like for the last 10 years, he's waiting for the one to like really
that's
hit
awesome.
Him that way. Yeah.
What is it like being in a relationship with another cartoonist? Do you guys get competitive? Like,
no.
Oh, sorry, mine's in this week.
Okay,
they get
here we go.
Of mine.
No, I think he worries about that. Like sometimes when he sells and I don't, uh-huh. I'll be like, so did you sell a cartoon? And he'll go, yeah. Which I think is adorable.
That's really cute. I'd be doing the happy dance.
Yeah,
I did.
You're very competitive, aren't you?
No, I'm not.
I'm not competitive at all. I mean, he sells a cartoon. I'm like, great. You owe me a steak. We have this deal like whoever sells has to buy the other person a steak.
That's great.
Yeah.
So you probably get a steak every week.
I get a lot of steaks.
You sell a lot. You both get a lot.
I don't sell as often as he does. I really don't. But I'm cool with that. You know. That's fine with me.
See, that's a positive, healthy attitude.
That is a really positive, healthy attitude.
Not like that monster that came out of the Whitney when you were...
Well, when I was a professional dancer, I did go a little black swan.
I know. It was tough. One day you're dancing for David Bowie, and then it's back on the pole.
Oh, boy.
In Jersey, in like a bus, you know. Yeah.
Like in The Wrestler, like Marisa Tomei. Let me tell you something. If strippers in Rahway, New Jersey look like Marisa Tomei, I'd be moving to Rahway, New Jersey. No, they don't. Yeah. No, they really don't. But as a documentary of New Jersey, otherwise The Wrestler was pretty good.
It was really good.
Yeah, anyway, Edith Zimmerman at The Hairpin, she's a really good editor, and like she'll go, we'll send back and forth like versions of the same piece about, you know, between 2 to 10 times.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like you're really going to be able to work a memoir out of those pieces because they're really great. I mean, if
you haven't
read them, go to The Hairpin and look up Carolita Johnson because they're just so engaging and they're interesting. And like, even you would think like reading about like a model's travails, which you don't really talk about very much. You think like, oh God, oh boo-hoo. But it's really relatable and well-written and very... I just am such a fan.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
I'm really glad that you like them.
Right. We're not jaded here at the Mike and Judy Show. No. Not at all. No, we love our guests. This is a show that we, with one notable exception, we love all.
Oh, really?
we get people on the show that we love and whom we want to share with our vast listening audience.
Yeah, we don't invite people on and then go like, oh, well, this is what we hate about you.
Yeah, but every once in a while the tables get turned and somebody thought was going to be hip and entertaining and together turns out to be not so much. Hey, before we go, though, I was enjoying on your blog, you've broken the food barrier, right? You're doing recipe comics now. Didn't you do something for Sephora?
Oh, I did one for Sephora.com, yeah.
Which is, I think, is cool. That's a whole new frontier, right?
I know, it was. I was really surprised she asked me to do one, and I was like, ooh, what am I going to do?
Because, you know, I like reading, you know, the food magazines and whatnot, and there aren't enough cartoons. I wish there were more,
you know,
food gags and these things. So I think you're onto something there.
Oh, good.
So tell us everywhere where people can find you, because we're almost out of time.
You can find me at The Hairpin, like you said, if you just do a search on Carolita Johnson, and you can find me at my website. If you just do carolita.org, it'll redirect you to whatever I'm working on right now. And I have a webcomic called Oscarina, and that's at oscarinaland.com.
That's great. Thank you so much for being part of this.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
You know, I look forward to reading you in the future.
And one more time, Judy, what's the name of your book?
Yes. I always screw it up. I've said this like
10
different times. The official book of sex, drugs, and rock and roll is available apparently now.
I can't wait. We're going to do a whole show dedicated to that book soon, right? Yeah. All right. It's the Mike and Judy Show with Carolina Johnson here at Roberta's. See you guys next week.
Bye. It's French music.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. Je te rends